From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I will be your host this morning. And we're going to be talking about a lot of issues that are out there pertaining to veterans. We've got a lot of guests coming up. We've got Tim Kelly. Tim has been a liver transplant patient. He also works with veterans. We've got Tricia Lupol from HCVets.com, who's going to be talking about hepatitis and hepatitis C. And it's one of the issues that we found that are really important. And we've got some what we feel is some breaking news that we want to talk about with you today. And also joining us in the studio in a little bit will be Mike Fraterna. He is from Legal Help for Veterans, one of our longtime sponsors and our resident expert on all things veterans. And we will have Mike on in a little bit to answer any of your questions and also to add his viewpoint as to what's going on with the hepatitis C problem. There's a lawsuit about denying veterans mental health benefits and a number of other things that are out there. And joining us at the bottom of the hour will be Congressman Bob Filner, who's chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. And we're going to be talking about the new Veterans Affairs budget and what his opinion is and what we think will happen, hopefully, where that money is going to go. So we want to make sure we do that. Also, again, joining me is Bob Gould, is our air boss today.
Airborne.
Yes, he is. And one of the things that I wanted to talk to is also it's important to remind you, our listeners, that this show is for you, for veterans and civilians to find out what's going on in the veterans community. So we encourage you to give us a call today if you get the opportunity at 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. And we'll be throwing that number out there throughout the program. And we're going to kind of change up a little bit today on our format. But we do have something. We do have some news from Berkeley, California. And what is important that
they're walking on the fighting side of me, running down a way of life our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning.
Okay,
when you're running.
I want to thank all of you veterans out there who sent emails to the Berkeley, California City Council. Evidently, Berkeley is backing off on banning the Marines and their recruiting station out there. It turns out that maybe they had underestimated what veterans really feel about when it comes to the Marines and the various other branches of the service. And it says the Berkeley mayor apologizes to the Marines over recruiting center flap. One of the lines here, something is that the letter will probably be pulled back, and perhaps we needed to think about it a little bit more before we brought it to the public. So again, congratulations out there to all of you to show your civic interest, and we know that the power of the internet is amazing, and contacting your congressman and so forth. If you don't agree with what's going on out there, whether you agree with what Berkeley did or did not, it's important to let your legislators know what's happening and how you feel about it. Otherwise, there won't be any change. Right, Bob?
That's right. And there's 25 million of us. You know what? That's a big block of votes. And we're going to be bringing a lot of that information to you during this election year, very important election
That's
year.
That's very true. And so without further ado, we're going to go straight into our Welcome Home segment. Well, Bob?
Thanks, Dale. Welcome Home. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who, in the service of their country, have been stationed around the world. Dateline, Fredericksburg, Virginia. The Virginia Army National Guard's 116th Brigade Special Troops Battalion were welcomed home following their year-long deployment in Iraq. Dateline, Paris, Texas. The 952nd Engineer Company, U.S. Army Reserve Headquarters in Paris, have reserved home to Texas. The 952 Engineer Company spent the last year moving dirt in and around Baghdad. These, I quote, horizontal engineers, unquote, built bases for American troops during their tour. Dateline, right here at home in Detroit, Michigan. A Detroit-based Army National Guard unit returned home to a rally of supporters on Friday from a 14-month tour of duty in Iraq. The 182 members of the Alpha Battalion, 182nd Field Artillery Security Forces of the Michigan National Guard were met by family and friends. Welcome Home is sponsored each week by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. For more information regarding the Marine Scholar Program, visit Ave Maria online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. Welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and today's first topic is we're going to be talking about hepatitis C. And I've got two guests that are coming on the line right now. Number one is Tim Kelly. Tim, good morning. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Morning.
How are you this morning?
Great.
Sounds like it's early, right? And also joining me on the line is Tricia Loophole. Tricia, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tricia, I'm going to ask you first. You're with the HCVets.com, which is an organization that is looking out for veterans that have to do with, obviously, the hepatitis C virus. Can you kind of give me a little background on what hepatitis C is?
Yes, sir, I can. Hepatitis C is a virus that is a member of the yellow fever dengue family, although there's not been enough studies to prove whether or not it transmits through mosquitoes, but it is a direct member of that family of viruses. What happened, the first recognition of hepatitis C was about 1942. They had given a yellow fever injections to about 300,000 troops, and of that number, many of them became very ill. And they discovered pretty much hepatitis B at that point. Later on down the road, research improved. We were able to detect the hepatitis C virus, and we found that all those samples had hepatitis C in it also. So that's the first record of the hepatitis C virus really presenting itself to the world. And this virus, although it's called hepatitis C, meaning inflammation of the liver, it attacks every organ in the body, the heart, the lungs. We found virus in the brain. So basically we're dealing with a very, type of virus that can alter its way of penetrating our body systems.
Right. It sounds like it's all-inclusive. It goes after everything.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it does. They've grouped us in with other viruses like hepatitis B, which they're not even related. One's a DNA virus, the other an RNA. You know, all the technical stuff I'm sure would bore everyone. But it gives a wrong impression of just how tragic this virus can be to the human body system.
Well, if hepatitis C is not treated, what is the result?
Well, a very slow, painful death. The virus is really tricky. It doesn't want to kill us right away. Mm-hmm. It likes us, you know, as the host to just serve it as it multiplies and divides. And unfortunately, treatment doesn't work for very many people, especially military vets going through the VA healthcare system. As of the last study we got on that, only 12% are receiving any benefit as far as clearing the virus completely. There are benefits of the injections and reversing fibrosis and some of the damage that has been caused, but totally clearing the virus from your system has not been achieved.
My understanding, Tricia, is that the hepatitis C virus attacks the liver more than anything else initially. Is that correct?
No, sir. That's pretty much the end of the road is the liver when that finally gives out for the ones who have survived the heart and lungs and bowel problems that have gastro digestive problems, these type of things. It's steadily working at all times on all these different parts of the system. And if you don't go out with a heart attack or, you know, some type of pancreatic cancer or something like this, then yes, the liver will eventually fail and that'll be the end.
Oh, okay. Tim, I wanted to bring you in on this because I know that you've had a liver transplant, but you also had some information that you wanted to share with us today about a study that the VA did about the transmission of the hepatitis C virus.
Right. HCV published it. And 2 years ago, I worked for the Disabled Veterans as a service officer, a state service officer, not a national. And at a convention, after going through the hepatitis waiting period, I was transfused in the 1960s. At these groups, I listened to all these veterans worrying about their symptoms. And it dawned on me in the 13 years I was doing it that a lot of them weren't in Vietnam, but we all had hepatitis C. At first, they were telling us, well, you know, the Vietnamese people had four times the amount of hepatitis C than any other country in the world. So if you're in contact with the dead bodies, that's how you contacted it. And I had asked if they had ever done a study in 1991, I ended up at a VA hospital in West Haven, Connecticut. And they told me, the VA had done a study and determined that the air guns did not cause hepatitis C.
Just to remind our audience out there that maybe weren't around during that time period, many of us during the Vietnam era received our vaccinations through these jet guns or pneumatic air guns where they would just inject the vaccine through your skin. There was no needle involved. And the issue is that these jet guns were never wiped off between the different troops as you went. You kind of went through this line and they just pushed these things against your arm and gave you shots. And if you moved, it could cut you. And many people had blood, I can remember, you know, dripping off their arms at this time. And I didn't know any better at the time, of course, saying, gee, this isn't very sanitary. But evidently, that is one way that this virus was transmitted. Is that correct?
Well, now they have determined in 2004, this Dr. Gary Rosell, Program Director for Infectious Diseases for the Veterans Administration, concluded that blood emollients, as the gun was turned off, after your injection went in, it made a hickey-like effect on your arm, and he says it did suck blood emollients back inside the gun. And the gun was wiped, but it was just wiped with a piece of gauze, nothing that would kill the virus. And when I read the numbers of the percentages of the veterans that have had hepatitis C, it's like 60 times worse than Agent Orange.
Right.
62.7% of all Vietnam veterans, era veterans, have hepatitis C.
We have it?
Well, that was in 2004. I just talked to a doctor at the VA the other day because I'm still very involved with the hepatitis C. And since 2004, they were mandated to check as many veterans as they could. And I was just told it was much higher. I wasn't given an exact percentage.
I'd like to weigh in there. The sad part about checking these veterans is if you go to the VA website and you look for the risk to hepatitis C, you won't see mention of reused needles and vials, which most got back then, or the jet guns. It's all about drug use. So these vets are running around thinking, well, I've never done drugs like most of us haven't, and yet they think they're safe, and it's just awful.
Well, Bob has just typed me a little question. Bob, you were a medic during your time period, and it was a little bit before the Vietnam era.
That's right. I was with the 326 Medical Battalion in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, with the 101 Airborne, and I remember using the guns. I remember the hickeys. Wipe it off, well...
No, we never saw that either with our people.
Yeah, sometimes we did, sometimes we didn't. Yeah. Things were running really fast. I mean, we were really running them through. They were lined up and just fast as you could shuffle.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, we got four shots at a time.
Yes.
And that didn't also, right behind the jet guns, they were coming with injections. And they would have the vials sitting on the trays and the needle, and they wipe the needle off with alcohol, reinsert it in the vial, and go on to the next person until the needle dulled. And
got the last shot. I can remember those.
Yeah, that would be awful, wouldn't it? Can you imagine 50 people in front of you, how dull that needle would be?
Can't get that thing in there.
We did our best.
Yeah.
Well, Tricia, what is the average, I don't know, in a regular population of hepatitis C virus, what is the percentage out there?
Well, we've worked really hard getting the CDC, another government agency, to really admit how many there are of us. And we're all at the consensus now, and we think it's higher, but we don't have any data to support it. About 5 million people are infected. And of that, through calculations based on government data, 2.5 million are veterans.
So half of them,
half at
approximately,
least.
Are
and
veterans.
We think it's even higher. People are just walking around and they're dying and being diagnosed of a heart attack when, in fact, they had the virus, but nobody checked for it.
Well, I have to interject this. For those of our listeners out there, if you have any questions about this or you think that you might have been exposed, give us a call at 877-573-7825, and we'll put you on the line and see if we can answer your question. I did contact the VA as far as trying to get someone on to, but they were busy this weekend.
Yeah.
And they deferred. They said, oh, we needed more time. But, Tim, I want to get back to you because of your experience in and that you did have a liver transplant, but they're saying that it wasn't related because you had a tattoo?
Oh, no. I am 100% service-connected for my hep C.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I did have a heart attack in 1989. I've had gastrointestinal problems all my life.
Checked. We have a free test kit. Let me inject this. On our website, hcvets.com, scroll down to the bottom, and you will see a link to a free test kit. So you can do it in the privacy of your own home for everyone to know.
Okay, that is good to know because I think many of us probably are hesitant to go and get the test because we're afraid of the results.
Afraid of the results and the stigma attached.
Right.
The doctors will treat you totally different once they know you have this.
Why is that? Tim, let me back up. You were in Vietnam. You were at Khe Sanh, am I correct?
Yes.
And you were wounded. And
no, I wasn't wounded.
You were not? Okay.
No, I was in a Jeep accident.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Okay. But you did get a transfusion.
Yes.
As a result of that, and they're thinking that's where you contracted it?
Well, that's what they had originally told me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very possible. But then, like I said, going to all these groups, all these other people never had a transfusion, and they have no risk factors as using IV needles. But they, when I do claims for hepatitis C now, and the VA's new trick is they send you back a letter saying, well, show us where you got hepatitis C in the service during your period of time in the service, when nobody knew you had it. Mm-hmm. It just sits in your body for years and then ravages it like 20, 30 years later.
Right.
But that's how they're trying to get around it, by telling you to prove you had hepatitis C at that time.
Well, they've done that with a lot of different things. I know even with the Agent Orange thing, they would ask you when you took the Agent Orange physical, where were you in country and when were you there and so forth. And many of us, in my job, I was a pilot, so I was everywhere. And, you know, they said, well, obviously you couldn't have picked up any of this stuff over there.
Well, they changed that. As long as you were in Vietnam proper, they cover you for Agent Orange now.
They should include Okinawa, too, where they stored it.
Right. I don't want to get off on a tangent of
right.
Agent Orange. We know that's another whole other issue there. But it sounds like that the hepatitis C is even going to be more prevalent than the Agent Orange exposure.
Well, they're doing their best to bury this. We had a lot of results going on in the late 90s as far as legislation before Congress, and we couldn't get anybody to agree on just what transmission methods would be considered presumed service-connected. So Congress ordered that Department of Defense do a study, and 5 years later we got the results of that study, but only after many other studies that were proving the point of how many were infected. And when the VA came out with this study, they diminished our numbers. They cut them slam in half. And what they had done was they handed out surveys at all the VAs, the clinics, different surveys, not the same. One would have the jet gun, one would not list it. Well, when the bottom line came and they put the data together, it looked like nobody ever got jet guns. You know, and so that, you know, they said, you know, kind of buried us there. And when they put their risk factors out, they included that if you had relations with more than two people, you're at risk. If you went to county jail, you're more at risk than service, you know, the jet guns and these reused needles. So they completely diminished our numbers, cut them right in half, yet they claim this risk, and in spite of these faulty surveys, the jet gun is higher, shows a higher risk factor than the relations you might have with another person, but they don't mention it. So I find it very, very screwy.
Right. I've got Elliot Storm is on the line, and I know he's a friend of yours, Tim.
Yep.
Elliot, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, Dale.
How are you doing?
Welcome home. I'm doing good. Good morning, my brother Tim.
You had a comment you wanted to make.
Got a question. A reporter asked me a question. And Tim, I don't know if they'd called you or not yesterday, but they wanted to know exactly how many people actually got the air gun shot. How many people were in the era of Vietnam and the Vietnam era and Vietnam vets who actually got the air gun shot? I gave them a figure, and I know it was wrong. And I don't know, Tim, if he called you or not yet, but they want to know. If someone can give me that question.
They called me, and they sent the study to them, but they didn't call me back after.
Can you give us a figure, Tim? Because I've got them.
Well, we had one at the beginning of the show. It was about 5 million.
5 million actual people had the. Well, I heard that. Okay.
No, that have had the shot.
5 million had the shot.
Hold on.
Two-thirds had hepatitis.
We're arguing numbers here. Just a second.
Oh.
Tricia, I know that you were saying 9 million.
There were 9 million that served during Vietnam era.
That was the number that I saw in your report.
That's the number I'd given reporter 9 million. He went what? And I said, I think it was 9 million. But
right.
The other question, hold on a second here. Yeah, I think that'll do it. And during what period was the air gun used? Time period.
You want me to answer?
Yeah.
Sorry, I know it's like the back of my hand.
Okay, go ahead.
In 1954-56, they came out with a modification of the gun. The military took it over at that point. But it was really about the early 60s that they kicked it into such high-pressure, volume, mass vaccination programs. From 64 until 1999, when DOD finally said they weren't going to use the gun anymore because of the risk it poses. They didn't say it caused it. They just said it could. Plausible, their favorite word.
Well, the plausible part, you know, and you just mentioned the idea of 9 million people going through the system and getting the shots with the air gun, and I believe your numbers from the hcvets.com website is at approximately 10%.
Yes, sir.
Are probably carriers now?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
10% carriers?
That's like 900,000.
But that's for all vets. That's not just the Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm.
That's 10% of 26 million. That's 2.6 million.
There was another number that I heard, Tim, of 62%.
Could you tell me what that number means?
62.7. Right. What is that?
That was the number in 2004 that Dr. Rozell came up with.
From the Vietnam era itself.
From the Vietnam era, as
yeah.
opposed to 4.3 for Korea, 4.2 for World War II, and 2.7 for the Persian Gulf.
And 18% post-Vietnam.
These numbers are astronomical.
They are.
Yeah. My final quote is this, is something Jim said to me. He said, if the right writer gets a hold of it, this is a Pulitzer Prize story.
Right. Okay. Well, you never know. We have a lot of listeners out there, and I think it is information that doesn't get out into the public press. I mean, we get it, you know, in the veterans underground press, I guess you could say, and we hear all of this information, and we keep trying to get it out to the mass media, and nobody's grabbing onto it. So hopefully somebody will grab onto it today, and we'll hear more about this. And as we get in and talking with Congressman Filner about the budget, maybe we can see where some of that money is going to go.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Arnold. Welcome home. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Elliot.
Bye-bye.
Very much. I guess, Tim, what can we do about this? I mean, I've gotten on my soapbox a little bit, but what do you think we can do?
March, the first week of March, the DAV is one of the first organizations. Then on my same week, the VFW, we'll all be in Washington lobbying our congressman from our state. Connecticut's small. We only have 5 and our 2 senators. But I'm taking this study down. The AC Vet study down with me is what I printed off the website.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was getting at, when I asked the VA, does the gun cause hepatitis C, I asked the attorney for the VARO in Connecticut, and he smiled and looked at the director of the hospital and said they just got a new study back that said, yes, it did. And I said, could you send me that study? And what he sent me was the HCVVets.com report, but he only gave me 5 pages. And a couple days ago when I first talked to you, I went online to get a cleaner copy because mine had been copied so many times. And I got 14 pages back. And on page 8, or not it, let's see. Yeah, the acknowledgement part. It said that hepatitis C is the result of receiving the immunizations in the service by means of multi-use jet guns. Conclusion of law, hepatitis C was incurred in the service, 38 U.S.C.A. 1131, with, I guess, when Togo West was the head of the VA in 2002, and CRF, 3-102, 3-303 in 2005.
Right.
And it tells people to refile their claims if they were denied before.
Okay. Tricia, I was going to ask you to kind of clarify that because I remember reading through your report late last night trying to learn as much as I could about
overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. And you've I'm recommending to anybody out there that's concerned about hepatitis C or think that you may have been exposed to it at some time is to go to Trisha's website. I mean, it's not just hers, but
it's hcvets.com.
And I think that you're going to find some information down there that really floor you because there was a lawsuit already that said, I mean, the lawsuit came back and said that the hepatitis C virus was transmitted through these air guns.
Well, see, the VA, the problem with that is the VA includes now on each claim they approve for hepatitis C the fact that this does not set precedence.
Yeah, I
know. So you can stand in line with one person, you both have hepatitis C, the other person went on to develop mental depression, which is like 60% prevalent with hep C patients, got himself a little wayward, and he's denied. It's kind of like PTSD.
Yeah, no, we're going to be coming up on a break at the bottom of the hour, and I'm going to ask both of you if you please would hang on, because I want to talk about this more with Mike Fraterna, who's here from Legal Help for Veterans. First, after we go through our Medal of Honor, we're going to be back with Congressman Bob Filner to talk a little bit about the budget, and maybe he'll want to touch on this issue also. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Give us a call at 877-573-7825. We'll be right back after this.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States.
There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Platoon Sergeant Finnis McCleary continued his assault on the North Vietnamese position, although severely wounded. Details after this.
College isn't cheap. In fact, it can be downright expensive. But the Air Force has a way for you to get that college education. If you attend classes while on active duty, we'll pay up to 100% of your tuition. And you could have more than $35,000 for school waiting for you through the GI Bill. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on to airforce.com. This message brought to you by the U.S. Air Force and this station.
A combined force was assigned the mission of assaulting a reinforced company of well-entrenched North Vietnamese Army regulars. As McCleary led his men up the hill and across an open area to close with the enemy, his platoon and other friendly elements were pinned down by heavy fire coming from the fortified enemy positions. Realizing the severe damage that the enemy could inflict on the combined force, McCleary rose from his sheltered position and began a one-man assault on the bunker complex. He moved across 60 meters of open ground as bullets struck all around him and rockets and grenades literally exploded at his feet. As he came within 30 meters of the key enemy bunker, McCleary began firing furiously from the hip and throwing hand grenades. At this point in his assault, shrapnel painfully wounded him, but with complete disregard for his wounds, he continued his advance on the key bunker and killed all of its occupants. Having successfully and single-handedly breaching the enemy perimeter, he climbed to the top of the bunker he had just captured and, in full view of the enemy, shouted encouragement to his men to follow his assault. As the friendly forces moved forward, McCleary began a lateral assault on the enemy bunker line. He continued to expose himself to the intense enemy fire as he moved from bunker to bunker, destroying each in turn. He was wounded a second time by shrapnel as he destroyed and routed the enemy from the hill. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio. If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Len Pitlack, CPA, is an award-winning consultant for the U.S. Small Business Development Center. Let him use his 25 years' experience to bring you, as an individual or small business owner, his professional and courteous tax and accounting services. Give Len Pitlack a call today at 734-993-1313.
Pat the Handyman and his team is ready to help you with your remodeling, repair, and painting projects. Call Pat the Handyman at 734-260-1158. That's 260-1158. Pat the Handyman is a veteran-owned business.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail, and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs. And we're back on Veterans Radio. We've been talking about hepatitis C and how it's been transmitted to a lot of veterans out there through our jet gun shots. But before we get back to that, I want to welcome Congressman Bob Filner to Veterans Radio. Congressman, welcome back.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come and talk to us. Congressman Filner is the head of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, and I understand that there's a new budget out there, and we don't think we're getting our fair share.
Well, that's a pattern that has been established for the last 6 or 7 years, where we get a budget that is not sufficient, and the Congress raises the money for it. The suggestion from the president is for a 5% roughly increase in medical care for veterans, although that just covers the inflationary costs. But in order to even get that 5%, they cut most of the major other areas, including construction of VA facilities. In addition, and again, they've done this for 6 or 7 years in a row, propose new enrollment fees for veterans and for increasing pharmacy copays, both of which we've rejected each year that they've proposed it. The independent budget, that is the budget proposed by veterans organizations around the country, suggests that it's about $1.6 billion too little, and we're going to go to work to raise that money.
Well, I think that's great because there was an article that came across this morning from the Washington Post that you know, the president asked for troop benefits during his State of the Union address, but unfortunately there's no money in the budget for it.
Right. That was an interesting sentence in his State of the Union where he thought that unused education benefits from the GI Bill could be transferred to spouses or children. Mm-hmm. It's a good idea, but one, he didn't provide any money to it. But we're going to undertake in the next few weeks, actually, a major revision of the GI Bill. We all know how important it was in 1944. It was last really updated in 1986. But it doesn't cover the cost, the true cost of education. It doesn't cover the true cost of a home under their loan program. So we're going to want to increase the benefits to cover the cost of college. We're going to increase the loan guarantee program so that it can help people purchase or refinance a home, which it does not do now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to add the Guard and Reserve units who have fought so valiantly in Iraq, may make up 50% of the fighting force there, make them for the first time eligible for full GI Bill benefits.
Well, I think that's a great...
We also want to include in there some sort of statement about the right of all veterans to get a good mental health care and an attack on homelessness for veterans. This is a national disgrace that we have allowed to happen.
Right. We're going to be addressing that issue, actually the mental health issue, a little bit later on in the program. I did want to ask you a question about mandatory funding. And just is there a possibility of that occurring?
Well, we're going to try to, and just to make sure your listeners know, the budget has two kinds of funding, what they call mandatory, which is automatically distributed. It's not a subject to congressional vote. It's just put in the budget, like a Social Security, for example. All they have to do is know how many people and what benefits they get, and it's put in the budget, and that's called mandatory. The other part of the budget is discretionary. That is, it's subject to amounts that Congress determines every year. Now, the benefits for veterans are mandatory, but the health care is not. And so we fight over it. Like I just said, we say it's $1.6 billion too little, and then Republicans and Democrats fight over it, and the House and Senate fight over it. And meanwhile, the VA does not get its money for health care maybe till 3 or 4 months into the budget process, as happened in this year. That's not the way to treat our veterans, either by fighting over it or by making it late.
Right.
If it was mandatory, it would just be calculated based on the number of veterans and what kind of care they need, and then it's automatically distributed on the first day of the fiscal year.
You've got to
have that, but there's going to be a political fight, not necessarily between the two parties, but by some who want to keep the congressional prerogative there. So we're going to try to do it. I can't guarantee the outcome, though.
Well, we can understand that. And obviously, the budget has increased over the last 7 or 8 years.
Oh, yeah.
Out of necessity, and also that people are, you know, pretty upset by it. So what we need to do again is to call our veterans community together and start contacting our congressmen and legislators and let them know how we feel about this. I know that some people from various veterans organizations were in Washington on Thursday, I believe it was. Didn't you have some committee meetings on Thursday?
Yeah, we had a budget hearing on Thursday, yeah.
Okay, and I know that they're going to be out there again. And I want to thank you for everything that you're doing to try and help us get the benefits that we've earned during our time in the service.
Well, we're going to continue work on it. The other priority we have, beside the update of the GI Bill, is to take care of this incredible backlog of the disability claims.
Right.
It's just staggering. It's hundreds of thousands of people waiting, and we want to try to cut through that with a proposal that will essentially say, as we do with your tax return, if you file for a refund on your tax fund, you'll get it within 3 or 4 weeks, mm-hmm. subject to audit of the complete tax return. That is, they assume it's right, but it's subject to audit. Well, if we have a claim that's been submitted by a veteran, say with the help of a veteran service officer, either from the state or county or one of the veterans organizations that are certified to do this, we should just accept it, start sending checks, and subject it to later review for as much time as anybody wants to take. But let's get that earned income to the veteran without having to wait years sometime for it. Especially the Agent Orange claims that the Vietnam vets have, I think we should just grant them all right now. People have been fighting for them for 20, 30, 40 years almost, and get that out. It's just a disgrace that veterans who have been disabled in their defense of our nation have to end up fighting a battle that is probably tougher than the enemy they originally faced.
Yes, it is.
I think so. Sometimes, Congressman Filner, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. I wish you luck, and we'll be in contact with you, and I'm sure that you'll be hearing from a number of our veteran friends as to what we can do to help ourselves. Thank you
very
much.
Thanks for the great job you're doing.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's most of us, at least in this room I know, have probably been to the VA hospital, and once you get into the system, the care is great. It's just getting in because it's so understaffed, and so hopefully we can raise some money and get that program going a little bit stronger. Tim and Teresa, I want to make sure that you're still there, and I wanted to kind of continue this. I guess is what do you think that we can do? I mean, we just had the congressman on. I probably should have had you talk to him. But what can we do to get people to pay attention to us? Either one of you?
I'll go ahead, Rich.
Well, I think Tim's starting at the right place. We've been lobbying Congress now for a while. They are aware of our situation, many of them. Many of them are, you know, there's no direction, so they can't really jump in to help us a lot. One of the reasons for this and the reason we're running into such obstacles is the hepatitis C funding is undergoing a takeover in the means that there's another group that wants control of this funding for obvious reasons.
Who might that be?
The HIV groups. That's where we're getting all this drug abuse and sexual relations as part of the mainstay high-risk group that they want to claim in order to capture the funding. And burying the vets even deeper is more of a goal than ever with these folks. There's a whole lot of information. Again, if you scroll down to hcvets.com, you'll see the newsletter, the black hole, and that'll just blow your mind what's going on that end of the spectrum. But it does eventually bleed back to us and prevents us, the veterans of this nation, from getting the recognition they so deserve. They're dying before their claims are approved, and then the whole process has to be started over by their dependents. And in most cases, have the virus too from them.
It is amazing. And Mike Returna is here in the studio with me. He's from Legal Help for Veterans. And during the break, we were talking about an argument that's going back and forth as to when this actually kicks in. And Mike, could you kind of share that with us?
Well, we have a lawsuit at the Veterans Court, and the issue is boiled down between two experts. One of which says that the incubation period is 20 to 25, and the other, the VA guy, says 25 to 30, and that's why they're – and the guy has no other – he doesn't have a transfusion, but he has no other bloodborne exposures except in service, and the time is right, whether it's 20 or 25 or 25 to 30.
Exactly.
Right, and Tricia, on your website, you'd also mentioned in there that they're – I guess they're going to reopen. They're looking at this in 25 years or something like that?
No, sir, I'm not aware of anybody holding it up based on a timeline. I do know they – are having trouble approving the claims because some people who get this virus and drink heavily, you know, go right on to cirrhosis 10 times faster than somebody who didn't drink.
Right.
So you could have a 30-year veteran dying at this very moment who drank a lot and one who is living with the virus who didn't. So they're putting in a confusing state here, and in my opinion, just to keep it confusing.
Right. We're going to take another break real quick, asking you to hold on. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Gary Lilly & Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and we've been talking with Tricia Lupol from the HCVets.com website, which is a great source of information for all of you out there who want to find information about hepatitis, especially if you're a veteran. You can go in there and you can get a little test kit at the bottom of the page that will, you know, you can do at home, and we can kind of find out if we are one of those 62.7% of Vietnam era veterans who, you know, might be carrying this virus around. Tricia, I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you. Anytime.
And we will have you back again. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye. Bye. Tim?
Yes.
I want to thank you also. Is there any place where that you would suggest that people go for more information other than Tricia's website?
Well, I think an important thing to bring up is I don't want to cause panic in the veterans.
Right.
This takes a long time to make. You might have it, the gene that causes it, and you test positive, but you're not going to get sick. Some veterans don't get sick from it.
Mm-hmm.
And the testing, when you do get sick, there's nothing painful. They catheterize your liver.
Oh, that's
The interferon and rivalvirin, if you just come down with hepatitis C now, like one of the new Gulf War vets or the Iraqi vets, they have interferon and rivalvirin shots that will cure you.
Oh, okay.
When I got my transplant in 2004, I did get hepatitis C in my new liver because I had it in my bloodstream, but I didn't have the cirrhosis. The rivalvirin and hepatitis C killed the virus in my system, and right now I'm totally viral-free. I don't test positive at all.
Well,
so there is hope out there.
Well, Tim, I'm glad that you've taken up this fight, and we're out there with you along with...
But get to the VA, because they're the front runners. Like West mm-hmm. Haven is one of the research... West Haven VA is a research center with one of the two top liver specialists in the world, Dr. Garcia, and... I'm in trouble.
That's all right. We just have another one of our senior moments. They happen. But Tim, I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio. We hope that we've helped get this story out a little bit more, and we will continue with the fight to let people know that this is a problem that needs to be addressed. And I want to thank you very, very much for being on Veterans Radio, and we hope that we can have you on again sometime soon.
Okay. And everybody out there, get a viral load test at the VA. That's conclusive.
Gotcha. We'll do that. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, you know, hepatitis C is not the only problem that we're having with the Veterans Affairs Administration right now. It seems as though there's another lawsuit going on out there. And our resident expert, Mike Viterna from Legal Help for Veterans, let me give another plug here for you. If you have a question, if your claim's been denied and you want some help, you can contact Mike at 800-693-4800. 800-693-4800. And the lawsuit that we're talking about is the denial of mental health benefits. Can you fill us in on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a lawsuit born out of desperation. It's different, like many that you think of for class actions. Attorneys for the Veterans for Common Sense and Veterans United for Truth have brought an action which is seeking declaratory and injunctive relief. Declaratory meaning that they want the court to remind the VA and DOD and others named in the suit of their duties under the law. It's primarily the petitioners here are those individuals that have PTSD claims pending against VA, and the focus really is on the lack of care, the lack of access, the lack of quality and timely care focused on their needs for PTSD. And like the representative was saying there, the funding for this is more, it's not mandatory, and that's the defense's, the government's position for this is, well, Congress gave us the authorization and some of the money, but we don't have to give it to everyone.
Well, and actually it's something that I read about this lawsuit is there's something like $60 million that hasn't been distributed for care?
Yes, yeah. This is a very broad indictment against not only the VA, but the DOD, the federal courts that review the veterans' claims. They slam just about everybody who's had a hand in not only denying the claims for veterans. I mean, it's a game of attrition. If you can outlive, mm-hmm. which you can't, the VA often on this claim adjudication, they're just extremely long delays. And as VA doesn't like PTSD claims, they're not, you know, a hard injury that you can see and sympathize with. So the litigation that we see just goes on forever. And it's a particularly vulnerable class because some of the very symptoms that they have associated with their condition make them more prone to just want to abandon this or not go for help in the first place. They don't want the stigma of the label. So it's an easy class of veterans to cast aside. And some of the focus on this study was really the not only DOD's failure to screen the PTSD and the suicide prone individuals, but for VA to pick them up as well. They, mm-hmm. I mean, were involved in a lawsuit where a veteran had a suicide gesture. He came back from Iraq. He didn't have room to be admitted at the VA. Was let home and killed himself. And that's the suicide rate has had a dramatic increase. And, you know, the sentiment is if they had early and quality intervention, that rate would be much lower. But, you know, even the military, I got a figure here that, you know, they had, I forget if it was 22,500 soldiers in the last 6 years have been discharged, labeled as personality disorders after they've served, even been in combat. And rather than recognize the psychological trauma of their experiences, they call it a personality disorder. It pre-existed service by definition. You have no claim, see you later, and they're divorced from the system.
We've talked to a number of veterans that have gone through that problem of where they've just been discharged and they have no right to benefit. I mean, not that they don't have right to the VA and all those other things, but they've been thrown out. They wanted to stay in the service and so on, but they have this pre-existing condition, which they probably should have caught when you were going through your enlistment period, and they didn't. And the suicide numbers, as you mentioned, are really quite astronomical when you talk about the number of people that have been involved in the Iraq-Afghanistan wars. They're much higher than they even were for the Vietnam veterans.
Yeah. There was a May 2007 report that I came across where 1,000 vets while under the care of VA committed suicide. And it's, they say, it's generally described as a lack of funding. And I think everybody on the show so far and has agreed that the amount, even though it's astronomical, $91 billion is probably far short of the average per vet need, and particularly those that are in an acute state, you know, as we are seeing now for individuals that are cycling through combat. Mm-hmm. So each return visit, I think, statistically raises their odds of, you know, having more.
Well, yeah, I would think so. I mean, only going through it once was plenty for me, but I've had people that we've talked to that have been there three times, four times, some five, and depending on the branch of the service, I mean, their deployments are 6 months, but many of them are 12 months, 15 months now, and when they, you know, if you've been someplace for 12 months and they suddenly say you're going to stay another three, it plays havoc with your mind. Yeah. And, well, let's suppose that. And this is where I wanted to, you know, get the legal help for veterans in there. So we go to the VA, or somebody is coming back from Iraq, goes to the VA, and they're declined for their claim. Once they've exhausted all of those things, they come to you. What would you do?
Well, if we see them before the window to close the evidence submission is out.
Is there a time frame?
Well, once the case has been certified to the Board of Appeals, they only have 90 days, and after that, the record is closed. So for our review at the court, we have to rely on procedural things. If we see the case earlier, then we often go to a forensic psychiatrist we use to try to analyze and re-portray the symptoms of record. You know, for instance, personality disorder symptoms are distinctly different from elements under the diagnostic code for PTSD, and the doctor then can pull those together and say, no, he had this, and this, and therefore he truly had PTSD. The bigger problem is trying to verify the stressor, and, you know, for Vietnam guys, for instance, it's hard for them to recall, as it would be with any of us, exactly what date. Because some of these record searches, they went down to a 30-day window. Well, what was I doing in 1968 on May 10th? Just a lot of hurdles for them, and we try to bring that evidence together and, you know, get them properly portrayed.
Well, you're more than willing to talk to anybody that gives you a call that you can direct them to help them, you know, where they may go and where they stand in the situation. Yeah. So we want to make sure that you do. If you can, give Mike a call at Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800. How about the fees? Wasn't there a law recently passed, or was there something that the government picks up part of the fee?
Yeah, effective in June of 2007, claimants before VA can hire an attorney for a fee after the notice of disagreement, the first appellate response to an adverse VA claim. And so they can hire an attorney if they need at that point. But, you know, that's their preference. Most of our cases we see at the court and go back down on the administrative level. But we take a lot of cases on their way to the board because that's really the last chance you can fix the record. Mm-hmm. At the court, we cannot submit new evidence. So if we needed that doctor's report to clear up five other doctors' misinterpretation of the symptoms, you can't do it then. You got to start all over, and they've lost all that retroactive time. So,
oh, okay.
And that's probably the biggest problem that a claimant has, is if their only access to care is through the VA system, they may not get the support for their claim as they would maybe from a private practitioner, but that practitioner would have to have some PTSD training as well.
Right, that would be really helpful.
So that's the best combination. They got somebody who really has a background is willing to help them.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you very much for coming in the studio and
you.
Listening to our conversation and adding some great information. Thanks. We'll be talking to you again, I'm sure. I want to thank all of you for listening to Veterans Radio. I want to make sure we thank our sponsors, the Marine Scholars Fund, the Quantum Physical Therapy, Legal Help for Veterans, Lynn Pitlack, CPA, Schrader Yachts, Barry Van Ness, Lillian Associates, Pat the Handyman. I want to thank all of our guests. It's really been a great opportunity to learn a lot of information for all of you out there that are suffering from these problems, or you know somebody that suffers from those problems. We're going to be trying to get our programs up on the web so you can listen to the archive version as soon as we can. We had a little technical difficulty, but we are doing that. Next week, we are going to be preempted by Ave Maria Radio with a special program that they're going to do. But we will be back in 2 weeks, and we're going to be talking to some friends of ours that flew gunships in Vietnam and also in Iraq and Afghanistan. We'll get back to the stories. Till then, you are dismissed.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of our guests and are not necessarily those of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.